Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the HR to my Harry and the Bart to my Barry, it's Dan. Well, actually, Dan isn't quite here yet. He'll be breaching into the podcast a little bit later, but we needed to get started without him. So fortunately, I am joined by a couple members of our little squad, our little band of villains, I'm going to call them this week. Because our own Killer Frost, without the white hair and the anger issues, it's Vicky.
Hi.
And our own Tokamak, without the lab coat and the anger issues, it's Jason.
Oh, you had to give me the worst villain there is.
Yeah, damn straight. So we are back once again this week to talk about what I imagine are the penultimate episodes of the seasons of Supergirl, The Flash, and Arrow. Just a word I wanted to mention about something that I think we've all seen online over the last few days, that the CW is adding another superhero show mid-season, so it's probably not going to show up until sometime in 2018, but we've been watching the trailer for Black Lightning. I would say, especially for a CW show, it doesn't look half bad. What did you guys think of it? I'll say right now, I like the fact that the main character isn't like 23 or 24 or 25. I like that it's an older dude for a change.
Well, I like the fact that it's an older person, as you said, and they've been doing it before, and he hangs it up at some point because it's too rough for his family, but he's forced to come back in. I like that hook.
Yeah, I'm kind of just generally excited for it because it's kind of adding more diversity to the superhero shows.
I was waiting for someone to play the diversity card here. Absolutely agree. It definitely has a nice little vibe to it. The only thing that's a little unfortunate, though we'll see if this changes over time, is that it's been reported, or I guess Berlanti, or no, actually it wasn't Berlanti who said it, but it was the head of CW, so it might as well be. That technically the show is not supposed to be part of the Arrowverse. So it's not meant to be part of the same continuum, whatever, as Flash, Legends, Arrow, and even Supergirl. Though they could eventually explain it away by being, you know, part of the multiverse or something.
I'm okay with that.
It doesn't
anchor them to the continuity of what's going on before.
Well, right.
They could do what they want.
But they could, yeah. I know it's more of a practical issue because this show is going to be shot in Atlanta and all the other shows are shot in Vancouver. So it's more about, but that's more about crossovers than anything else. I just feel there's no reason it couldn't have taken place within the same, you know, quote unquote universe, you know, because you never know, a year or two down the line, there may be a way to have some sort of crossover. I mean, Green Arrow meeting Black Lightning, I think would be kind of cool. So that's why I believe they're saying that now. But let's see if it's a success to begin with and how long these other shows actually stick around, because Arrow's going to be in its sixth season already next year. There's no guarantee how long Arrow will be around, quite frankly. But it's always possible. Remember that they were acting like they weren't going to do that with Supergirl at one point, you know, way back when, and then all of a sudden she crosses over with The Flash when she was on CBS and so on and so forth. So
right.
You never know.
It could be just like a testing ground for the show, see how it does. Mm-hmm. And then they'll cross over with it after that.
Yeah, I mean, the big news about crossovers is that they've said that they will, the next major crossover will fully integrate all four shows instead of the whole, well, Supergirl was promoted like she was part of the crossover, her show at least, and kind of really wasn't. But this time it really will be fully integrated, so that's something to look forward to. So hopefully it'll be a storyline that's not just another alien invasion or something, I guess. Speaking of Supergirl, I think that should be the show we're going to start off with tonight, because, as he said offline, I think Dan has pretty much kicked Supergirl to the curb at this point. So I think this week it's only going to be me. I think it's just me and you, Vix, on that one, right?
I think so.
All right, so don't worry about you haven't had much to say, because you're going to have a lot to say in a second. Because the next show we are going to talk about is Supergirl. Now, the latest episode was titled Resist. And let me give you a little mini, micro mini or mini skirt recap here. I don't know what to call it for Supergirl. I'm already being chauvinist, sorry. Anyway, the Daxam invasion is on. Cat Grant returns, along with the shape-shifting president. Rhea insists on Mon-El and Lena getting married, but at least these two very attractive people aren't being forced to have sex, as that would be much worse than anything else Rhea has done. Well, maybe not. Anyway, Supergirl leads an unlikely alliance with Lillian Luthor and that colander face guy to rescue Mon-El and Lena. And they get away, except Supergirl decides to stick around to try and reason with the woman who we've already seen kill her husband just for disagreeing with her about how to raise their kid. But Rhea ain't scared of no Supergirl, because we find out her actual secret weapon is Superman. So, the way I looked at this episode, Vicky, is I'd say it's like it's all about the return of Cat Grant and then everything else. So we've been wanting this, I think, for most of the season. And, you know, I know it's due to where the actress lives and contractual issues, blah, 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 blah. I'm just excited that Cat Grant was back. So how did you feel about her return and her many scenes? I already know which scenes stuck out for you. I would be surprised if they're not the ones you cite. But, maybe surprise me. But how'd you feel about her return?
Oh, gosh, I was so happy. When I was watching this, my sister and I were saying, like, oh, my gosh, Miss Cat Grant so much. This show needed her so much. I mean, not that it was horrible without her, but she just adds that, you know, that extra bit to the show that makes it so great. And I found it pretty hilarious that, what was it, the president used to be Cat's RA.
Oh, yeah. I love that. That was a fascinating little backstory to add there, because it never occurred to me, although it makes perfect sense now that I think about it, since she was present, and they would have vetted her history to a certain degree, that, she's not just an alien. She's an alien who's been there for a long time. But, you know, much like John Jones has been there for a long time. But, yeah, Cat Grant just adds sizzle to the show. You know, she's a character that pops, and it makes you aware of how certain characters don't so much. And again, I don't expect every character on any show to be, you know, bright and shiny and like a jewel there. But you need more than just one or two. And thankfully, having Cat Grant back, what the hell did I just say? I think just gave the show a spark that it's been missing for way too long at this point. Again, the joke is, we all remember how much most of us didn't really like Cat Grant in the first few episodes back in season one. And now, I think the actress, Calista Flockhart, is also just much more comfortable in the role. I mean, her line deliveries feel a lot more smooth and less contrived as I thought they were back in the early days of Supergirl. So, can I just say, I mean, before I let you get a chance to talk again, can I just say what my favorite moment with her was? I just popped into my head. Because it's a joke. It's a total joke on the show as well. How she is able to recognize that James Olsen is the Guardian just by seeing his eyes through the helmet, but still doesn't really seem to actually, because we've gone back and forth on this. I'm now falling on the side of, they're doing this, the comic book thing. She really doesn't realize that Kara is Supergirl. So I think that's just, I thought those the writers just having a big old laugh at us. I thought that was very funny, quite frankly.
Yeah, that was hilarious. They kind of tried to substitute her with, like, Snapper Carr, and that kind of didn't work because it's not the same. So having her back was, like, fantastic. Personally, my favorite scene was when, you know, they're on Air Force One talking with Rhea via the video and whatever. And Kat is just like, you know, surely, you know, we don't need to measure anything. We're women. Yeah. And just her, she has no regard for, you know, Rhea. She just completely dismisses her and puts her in her place. she, you know, it shows that she's not afraid of anyone.
Right. That was the scene I assumed you were going to go to.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't a big surprise there. Yeah, but it was actually, you also have the fun of, you've got, you know, Terry Hatcher, who's chewing up the scenery, Linda Carter, who's doing whatever the heck Linda Carter is doing, quite frankly, and then Calista Flockhart. So there's a lot of fun just having these, like, kind of oversized characters kind of bouncing off one another in that moment. And also playing on the, I think it's actually become a running joke on in the Superman series that at some point something has to happen to Air Force One. Except this is the first time, instead of the plane being saved, the plane goes boom, but it turns out the president's okay after all because of the whole alien thing. Because when I first was realizing that Air Force One was going down, I was like, really? They're playing the Air Force One card is going down card? Because that's happened in, like, every other Superman movie at this point, you know?
Yeah. And what was it when, you know, we were talking there, and she was like, you know, we're, you know, three strong, formidable women. We can do whatever we want. I think it was just so refreshing to see all, you know, all these women in various, you know, with various forms of power.
Right.
And just, they're just, you know, I think it was really great, and we kind of need to see more of that.
Yes. Again, that's why I knew you were going to go to that scene.
Well, and I just kind of love how the villain is a female again, and she's just so unabashed about it. And I think it's fantastic.
Well, I like that at least the Rhea character, although I'm not going to say I don't really like her character all that much.
Oh, yeah.
But I like that she's a villain, but it's not about the fact her gender is not important. You know, she is the mother queen, the queen mother, and she killed her husband like that, which is like, whoa, that's some serious, that's like beyond Game of Thrones kind of shit there.
That's stone cold.
Yeah, really. And part of me is always, but keeps like, but it's Terry Hatcher. I still a little bit of a hard one to get past there. And the fact that they haven't figured out a way to have Jeremiah show up, because really, you're not going to have a scene with Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher in this? How are you letting that one go by? Still think there's a chance he could show up in the final episode for some reason, because how do you not do that? How do you not have that happen?
Yeah, exactly. But like what you were saying about the thing with Kat recognizing James, when Kara was kind of in that back alley talking with Kat, mm-hmm. You know, she says, you know, I really missed your advice, Miss Grant, and she's like, oh, you know, I really miss giving it. So I'm like, is that kind of did Kara kind of just like slip up and there and you know, Kat was like, oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, there have been a couple episodes in season one where she gave Supergirl advice.
That's true.
So, even going all that whole message of hope crap late in the season. So I didn't view that as a specific mistake, but
yeah. Yeah, again, there were a couple of times where I thought maybe I was reading into it a little too much, but yeah.
Yeah, again, like all these shows that we talk about, it's not a subtle show. So I'm thinking if there's something there to be pick up on, we're going to pick up on it. This show is it's interesting because it's so unabashed and not subtle at all in dealing with any number of political parallels to what's going on. Obviously, all the stuff, you know, either it be your women's issues, or the whole, obviously the aliens are supposed to mirror what's been going on with the illegal aliens, and then the stuff with the media and the trust in the media is obviously it's fascinating how they've been incorporating that. And I've read some articles about it, and you know, I know there are some viewers who got put off by it, but the people behind the show and people who wrote the article were saying, that's been part of the DNA of the show from the get-go. So it's one of those things, like, if you don't like that, then you shouldn't watch the show, because that's been part of the show from the beginning. It's not like something they just started doing out of nowhere. And
yeah.
And I agree with that. I mean, that stuff doesn't bother me because beyond the fact that it probably does match my own political views anyway, there's nothing new there. I mean, one can point to any number of sci-fi fantasy shows over the last 55 years that did stuff that wasn't all that. The Twilight Zone wasn't all that subtle in some of its classic episodes either, guys. So deal with it.
Yeah, it's not like, I was going to say, it's not like it's new for, like, comic books or sci-fi to do this, no, so, at all.
Right.
So, yeah.
A lot of the point of science fiction and fantasy, it is social commentary. It is a reflection on society and commenting on things going on now, but and they frame it in this, whether it be a post-apocalyptic world, or it could be the world of Star Trek, and I mentioned Star Trek because I believe our Star Trek fan just stepped into the podcast. Hey, Dan.
Hey, it's me. I'm here. I beamed in.
Yeah, it was perfect time, right, when I was actually mentioning Star Trek. So there's nothing really unusual there. So I think the only difference is, for whatever reason, that over the past year or two, the entire country has become so much more politically charged and sensitive that they become more aware of this kind of stuff or get more put off by it than they did even just a few years ago. And in which case, they can just go watch, you know, something else. Okay, beyond the Cat Grant stuff, was there anything else that really was either appealing or got you down about this episode, Vicky?
I actually had a hard time kind of finding a whole lot of faults with this. I thought kind of both things that were going on meshed really well together. There wasn't a whole lot of drag to the episode. I mean,
It didn't lag. Yeah. You're right about, I definitely agree with that, that there weren't like, oh, come on, get on with it scenes. So they didn't waste quite as much time. In fact, I thought there was a lot of it that was just kind of goofy over the top, but I like that. It was like, now there's suddenly an invasion, and all of a sudden there's people being, you know, zapped in the streets and all this other crazy crap. I'm like, that's more interesting than half the shit we've watched on the show this year, I think.
One of my favorite parts was when, you know, Alex was doing all that stuff in slow-mo, and she jumps out of the building shooting them, and the Daxamites and Supergirl just catches her.
But you know what? That was actually a reasonably well-choreographed sequence. And considering what we were saying about a certain other show just the other day, not being that good at that as of late, I kind of enjoyed that. I thought they did a pretty decent job with that as well. I'm kind of surprised. I mean, I've seen a very different reactions to this episode online. I've seen people who really loved it. I've seen people who say, I'm out after this one. I'm not sure why this would be the episode that would lead them to abandon the show, because it's like, wow, I can mention 20 other worse episodes than this one. I kind of liked it. I also liked the fact that they were able to bring Cadmus back into it and have... This is the week, by the way.
Yeah.
Another running... Do you notice it tends to be running themes that actually end up on all the different shows? Because all three shows had our main hero a lot being allies with one of their villains. Yeah. What the hell is going on?
I thought that was a really good way to kind of bring Cadmus back in.
Well, what was interesting about it is because what was happening, as Lillian Luther says, is exactly what she was preaching, the kind of thing that could happen. So in a way, it almost gives voice to the other side of that political issue, kind of putting like, hey, you see, bad things can happen. She kept worrying about, you know, there being an alien invasion, and she didn't even see the crossover, apparently. Here's another one, you know. So I feel like I liked this episode more than I should have, and of course the ending. That was
you know what? I didn't see that coming.
I felt it was coming only within the last minute because I knew that character, well, I don't know, I'm acting like it's a spoiler because we're talking about the episode. I knew that Superman was supposed to be in the finale. So, and I kept thinking, they got a hint at him, and then I realized, Oh, I wonder if he's under some sort of mind control or whatever. Who the fuck knows what
this is? Well, when we saw the cannon, you know, shot, it, we were like, it looks like it was I-beams. Who could that have been? Wait, right. Was it Superman?
Yeah, don't get me started.
But we're like, that's kind of the only logical...
Right, it made perfect sense, even though I don't know why their I-beams are that color. They should be red. But anyway, okay, that's as bad as yellow boots. The only other comment I want to make, then I want to get onto the score so we can move on to the next one. I am just a little irked that once again it's like, oh look, John Jones is laid up in bed, and so that's yeah. why the Martian Manager, because you know otherwise he'd be more powerful than all this crap. And
oh yeah,
I will also confess that I know it seems like Supergirl should be able to do a lot more than she does sometimes on the show. And so that always kind of bothers. I mean, I understand it, so it makes her a bit more, for lack of a better word, human. But part of me is like, but she can do so much more than this. She could, you know, she could, you know, you think she, I mean, she should be almost as fast as the Flash. There's a lot of shit she should be able to do, but yeah. That's not what the show is. And, you know.
I did wonder why, well, like, I mean, they were worrying whether or not they would able to be get back with the transport thing. And I was just, well, technically they could just find the nearest exit or whatever and she could just fly them out.
She could smash her way through.
She could do that too. She could just smash a hole in the...
Yeah, she's Supergirl. There's a big window there. She can't smash through the window? Come on.
Yeah.
See, now you're going to make me lower the grade. All right. Okay. Let's wrap this up because I want to get to the next show. So, okay. After all that, what score would you give this latest episode of Supergirl?
I'm gonna give it a 5.
Whoa. You know what? Talking about it made me realize how much I actually liked it. I'm not gonna go to that extreme that you just did, but I will give it a 4.5. I think it definitely makes me want to see the final episode. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Okay. Now, speaking of good ones, spoiler, that means I must have liked the episode. Next, we are going to be talking about The Flash. Now, the latest episode was entitled, why did I say entitled? It's titled. Titled Infantino Street. So here's my semi-mini recap for that one. Apparently, there's only one power source on Earth 1 that can properly power the Speed Force bazooka to take down Savitar, and it turns out to be some alien tech left over by the Dominators from their invasion last year. Argus has it, but Lila's unwilling to give it to Barry, despite the fact she knows that means certain death for Iris. So I guess she really is like Amanda Waller at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, she does change her mind a half an hour later when she sees what a good guy Barry really is, when he chose to save the hastily recruited Captain Cold from the jaws of Killer Shark. So she's just really judgy, I guess. Now, unbeknownst to Barry, so that it doesn't pop into Savitar's head, Joe and Wally whisk Iris off to Earth 2 to stay out of Savitar's clutches. I got a few questions about that, but I can save that for later, and something that might actually be my speed weed moment, so hopefully no one blows it for me. But suffice to say, HR blows the secret to the evil Barry. You know, Savitar. And why the hell did Evil Time Remnant Barry pick the name of some obscure Hindu god? Never mind. So he breaches the next Earth over to break Wally's leg and snatch Iris away. Now, Sisko heads up to some unidentified forest to finally have that meta throwdown with Killer Frost. And then we get to see the scene that we've watched play out more often than Barry losing his mom. We head down to that square that's off of Infantino Street, and we see that the Speed Force bazooka may as well be a piece of Bazooka Joe gum. And with both not fast enough still Barry, and maybe he shouldn't have told his, you know, her Barry secret after all, Joe, looking on from above, Savitar skewers Iris. Or did he? So, let's work in reverse again here, and let's start with the end. Because the big question right now is, did they really just kill Iris? Or maybe someone such as HR might have been feeling a little bit responsible as well as being useless, and maybe he just sacrificed himself using that identity transmogrifier you know, either way, the question I have for you guys is, you know, about theories, about how you felt about the ending, and whether you thought this worked on either an emotional level as well as a storytelling basis. And now, as we head into the final episode, are we still liking the season better than the last one, or vice versa? So, again, let's get to the ending. Jason, you've not had anything to say as of yet, because you weren't watching Supergirl either, so let's start with you now.
I've been conserving my voice. Well, I have to echo what you just said. Did they really do it? Did they kill Iris? It's going to be an interesting question for next week. I do have, I don't know, is it a knit? Is it a hanging plot thread? I don't know. But didn't one of the times that they go back in time, wasn't HR up on a building?
Well, that's that's the whole point.
Yeah.
That's the point. Because things have changed back and forth. The fact that he's up on that building is actually one of the clues that, yeah, he's there, but he's not up there. He's actually the one getting... Because remember the last time we see HR?
He was very upset.
No. Not the whole upset thing. He's looking at that big claw thing that they cut off of Savitar.
Oh, yeah.
They have a lingering look at that. So they were kind of like dropping in, like, hey, guys, I mean, it could be a red herring, but that would also give his character, I mean, his character actually was good for something at some point this season.
But how would he be in position to, like, take Iris's place? Because he was freaked out because Iris got taken. Well, Iris is with Savitar, so there's, like, you know, there's no, like, unbroken, there's an unbroken chain of her being captured by Savitar, so there's, like, no place for him to sneak in as
her. Is that the order of events? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because he was taken, she was taken from Earth 2.
Yeah, he told Savitar that she was on Earth 2, and then he went there and took her directly, and then HR freaked out about it because he fucked up. There's no.
Well, why don't you guys talk about it for a little while? I'm going to do a little research on this, so I can be silent for a few minutes and figure that out. So, so you get what you guys just talk about the ending and everything else. I'm going to look into this myself. So.
Yeah, thought did occur to me, but like you were saying, Dan, there kind of wouldn't have been any opportunity to switch the real Iris out. So I don't know.
By the way, you are going on the faith that there's no way they're just gonna backtrack and explain something away, because otherwise you're saying then Iris is definitely dead. Never mind the fact that Candace Patton has a contract for next season, but you know, she's definitely dead.
Yeah, no, I was like, wait, did they really just kill her? So, yeah, I don't know. I'm very confused.
Also note in the ads for next week's episode, one can say, but do you notice that we don't see Iris anywhere, so maybe she really is dead? Like, oh, yeah. Hey, do you notice we also don't see HR anywhere in that ad either? Just saying, that gives that there. But let me look into the whole order of events thing and see if there's a loophole or not, so. You guys, there's three of you. Chat.
I mean, obviously, there's a way out of this that we haven't seen yet. What it is, I don't know. I don't know, but I think there is no way that they could have switched places because they snatched up right from Earth 2.
Keep talking. Wait, really? Do I have to? Okay. Well. Okay. So let's say that's not what happened. Then if we're going to go on the idea that they just killed Iris, then how do you feel about them having just killed Iris then? If that's the theory then. And did it affect you? I saw any number of people who actually thought they did a really good job of playing that scene up, which is interesting considering how many times we've seen this already, that it can finally actually have an emotional impact on anybody. I'm not saying it did for everybody. I would not be surprised if at least one or two people here were not emotionally affected by it at all. But I was curious to see how you guys felt about it, you know, putting aside any theories of whether or not she's actually dead. Because here's the thing. They can't go to the let's go back in time and change it again well anymore. They can't do that again. No. So that's why it's either Iris is... So basically, there's only really two options that I can see. It's somehow it wasn't Iris, or she's dead. It's not going to be, we're going to spin around the earth and set things right again, kind of thing.
I'm going to echo your sentiments. The scene was really well done, even though we've seen it many times before. And it did leave you with the question, like, is this really going to happen? I mean, is she really going to get stabbed? And when she does get stabbed, that does open up all the questions like, is it really her? How are they going to bring her back? What's going to happen from here on out?
Well, the one good thing, I always say this about TV writing specifically, and although The Flash does not fall into the category of the best shows, but the best shows will come up with a way to end an episode where you're like, I don't know how the heck they're going to get out of this the following week. The best cliffhanger situations, the best whatever. You know, and we've seen, you can think of any number of shows you guys like where you've seen that at the end of a specific episode. You know, Lost was very good at that several times, for example, to use one I know everyone here has watched and loved. So I'm trying to give them credit for having come up with a situation which is like, wait, what? And then we'll see how they find their way out of it. It kind of takes me back to Ollie being stabbed on the mountain back in season, what was that, three? Season three of Arrow. And we had our theories how they could pull it off, because obviously you didn't just kill the main character. But I like the fact they did write themselves into a situation like, okay, you got to come up with at least a remotely plausible explanation for this, because he looks like he should be dead. So I'm kind of hoping they'll come up with something for this Iris thing.
That was a good analogy as to going back to Ollie when he got stabbed and thrown off the mountain. There was no way you figured, like, well, how in the world is he going to survive? Well, his katana found him then.
Oh, right. That was how that happened. I was like, part of me was like, wait, it wasn't a Lazarus pit. That's everybody else on the show.
No.
And I was like, oh, yeah, he was conveniently found by the whole whole thing. Did we lose Dan in the something? I don't know what just happened there. He seemed to have his little visage vanished in Skype. I hope it was a technical problem. He didn't just, you know, get angry or something.
Okay. No, he's dropping in and out.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't sure because I'm still trying to carry on the conversation while. Oh, here we go. Now I found it. Okay. Well, let me give you guys another another topic to talk about while I read this to see if. Okay. Moving away from the ending, and unfortunately, I know probably Kate wasn't happy about the fact that we didn't get an explanation to how he ended up with a suit like that, because I have to agree with Kate. Wait, when did Barry become, you know, a scientific genius to that extent? I mean, I know he's smart. He's not Cisco. But I still like the idea. I think it might have been Dan. Somehow or other, a future Cisco came up with that suit. Maybe it was repurposed for something else. I just feel like that was a Cisco creation. And unfortunately, maybe we'll never get that explanation, but I like theorizing that's what it is. So, one of the highlights I thought of this episode, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, was bringing Captain Cold back into it. And the one convenient thing about having a time-traveling hero, despite him promising never to do that again, is that thanks to the Legend show, at any point in time, no pun intended, someone can go and grab Captain Cold while he's still alive. So it's a great idea how they can keep him going. I'll just say that the version we got of Snart here, which still differs from a couple other versions we've seen even on Legends this past season, this was a Snart that I really enjoy. You know, I like that he does those slyly dropped lines, that they have just the right little mix of both menace and camp. I really felt the scenes between him and Barry were enormously enjoyable. And in fact, I thought they accomplished in this episode something that was said a while back about Captain Cold making a reference to Barry inspiring him as a hero or something, which I didn't buy at the time. I don't remember. I guess that was that on Legends or was it on Flash? I can't remember which show. You know what I'm talking about. You remember what I'm talking about, right? I'm not imagining that, right?
You're not crazy.
Okay, I'm not crazy. This episode made me believe that. This episode actually made that work for me. Okay, so, Vicky, talk about Captain Cold while I continue to do my research.
Okay, yes. This was such a delight. As we know, I'm, like, you know, huge fan of Cold, so any bit of him that we can get on the show, I'm going to love. But I think, you know, like you were saying, kind of the versions of Cole that we've seen, this is was kind of the best version that the situation called for.
Got the explanation.
Because, you know, like, he's still that, you know, that he's still got that, you know, bad guy. He's still in that thieving mode. But he's also now been around the legends a little bit. So he's getting that little bit of goodness in him that's starting to come out.
Right.
And like he was saying, you know, at the end, you know, you see the good in me and I see the bad in you. They kind of see both aspects. Both of those aspects in each other.
And what's funny about that is I don't think for the entire episode that Cold is aware that the actual villain is Barry. Because there's no reason he would have been told this.
Oh, no.
So him saying about seeing the bad in him, wow, I'm impressed with the writing on that for a change there, because that's really smart, because... Yeah, so do we. That's who the villain is. By the way, there is an explanation how it could be switched to HR. I'm going to hold back on saying what it is until we see if Dan can return to the podcast. Technology has bumped him out of the Skype thing. Skype is screwing him, apparently. If by the time we're wrapping up the Flash conversation, if Dan isn't back, I will say how HR could have replaced Iris. And once I say it, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, duh. So, but let's continue with the Captain Cold conversation, as well as him saying, come on, adorable. What's fucking on? I couldn't stop laughing. And they spoiled that in the ads, and it still made me laugh. That's when you know a joke is good. It still made me laugh. Like, King Shark, that's adorable.
Yeah. And I really liked how he made Barry stepped back when Barry was all ready to shoot King Shark, and he was like, or, you know, we can lower the temperature of the room, or you can be all murdery and prove what a badass you are.
Yeah, that was an interesting turn for him, and you're right, and I think it's what you were saying before about how at this point in time, the word time drives me crazy to talk about the Flash now, that he has been impacted by his time with the Legends, so that Captain Cold pre-Legends wouldn't have given a moment's thought to that. He wouldn't have cared. So it's interesting that he would say that. And it's not, and I think it's not so much about the fact he would give two figs about, you know, King Shark's life or not. It's his concern for Barry.
Mm-hmm.
About Barry not stepping over the line. Little does he know the things that Barry has done, quite frankly. He's stepped over a lot of lines at this point. But maybe not that one. Although, did they kill a bunch of villains in season one, or am I just confusing him with Arrow? I'm not sure. Anyway. Now, with the Captain Cold stuff, obviously we also got some Argus stuff, which is kind of neat to have that, you know, that little bleeding over from Arrow. How'd you feel about the Lila stuff and her decision making in this episode, as far as I was concerned?
It'd make a whole lot of sense if she was in the end going to help him out. Why didn't she just help him out from the beginning? Why go through the whole rigmarole of having him break in?
Well, it's the thing I found questionable about it is that she needed to see this happen, you know, to prove that Barry really is, you know, an honorable guy, a good guy to do this. I was like, really? You did? You needed like one more thing to happen to prove that to you?
She should know that already.
Yeah, I mean, you know what it was? I believed her trepidation at first. My thing was, oh, but because he cared about making sure the guy's usually a bad guy lived, made you change your mind. I mean, I'll go along with it because it wasn't that... I mean, it didn't bother me that much. It just made me think, really? That's it? Okay, whatever. Go on.
I kind of didn't believe for a second that she didn't think that they wouldn't try and break in. Because she's smart enough to know that they're saying this is the one thing that we need. Only you have it. You know? So, she... Yeah. It annoyed me.
And it's interesting because we've also been seeing her show up in the last couple episodes of Arrow. So, and in a sense, it does kind of go along with the way she's been acting or the way that character has been in Arrow, I suppose. As far as just seeing things in a very clear cut fashion and not letting sentimentality cloud her views, which is why I made the comment about her being just a little bit Amanda Waller-ish here right now. But maybe that's what the job really leads you to be when you're in charge of Argus. You know, so maybe they need like a Nick Fury person over there or something. Anyway.
Hi.
Hey, look who's back.
Yay.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
You're welcome. Like for the past 10 minutes, I've been trying to get him back on.
I've been trapped in the Speed Force.
So
what did you guys decide about Iris? Can you guys bring me up to speed?
Oh, okay. Here's
a speed joke.
Now, okay. So now that you're back, I did have time to do a little research on this. Okay. So everybody's issue, not everybody, the issue was that, HR couldn't possibly replace Iris because Iris is snatched by Savitar off of Earth 2. And then from that point on, he's got Iris. And that's it. And there's no way HR could replace him. Except you're kind of forgetting the most obvious time it would happen. When Barry is trying to shoot him with the Speed Force gun, he's zapping all over the place. He's not carrying Iris with him while he's doing that. So it's at that point in time HR could have switched places with Iris. And that's what the theory is. That's where HR switches with Iris and he's the one who gets killed. And that's, I'm kind of putting my money on that until proven otherwise, because it's much easier to believe another version of Tom Cavanaugh dies than they just killed Iris West on this show. That would be, I just think that's too major. And it would just, and you don't use the transmogrifier the way they did early in the episode without a plan. So it just felt like there's a reason you brought that invention up, because we've kind of forgotten they had that capability, that it's going to get used for something much bigger. You know, it's kind of like you see the gun, you know it's going to get used at some point kind of a thing. So that's why I think that's it.
Would that explain why, like, Joe doesn't take the shot then?
That could explain why Joe doesn't take the shot, yeah.
Mm. Okay.
So who does the switching? Barry does the switching?
Maybe Wally could do
it? No, because I think Barry's
Savitar would know too.
HR would do it himself. Why would he require someone else to help him do that? You know, what more does he's got a device which makes him can make you appear to look exactly like the other person, you know, from head to toe, as Barry did earlier in the episode. So there's no concern about that. But
they're in the middle of this giant square, so like, you know, he has to come from somewhere, and I mean, they're not exactly moving. HR wouldn't be moving as fast as these guys that are moving fast and
can he already like, know but the key is he already knows everyone knows where everything is going to happen. They've known this for months now. So, you know, HR had all the fucking time in the world to situate himself somewhere. He could be hiding right behind the goddamn platform for all you know. So this isn't like, how can I get there in time? Where are they? He knows where they are. He knows where they're going to be. They've known that for like 3 or 4 months now. It might be the easiest, you know, thing to plan ahead of all time, because they couldn't find any other way to get rid of Iris, which I don't want to talk about because it's a speed lead moment. So
my speed lead moment happens to tie into this very scene as well.
maybe we'll have the same one. Maybe I'll go
and
first.
And this could be a solution to what my speed lead moment is. So maybe
intriguing.
Maybe that makes sense.
Intriguing. Okay. So anyway, that would be the little window of time, even if it's only, you know, a brief one. But considering how long they spent with him trying to shoot him and it not working, and then him doing the whole thing, standing somewhere else, and that's probably why they choreographed it in that manner so they could pull that off. So. And that does explain why Joe doesn't even try to take a shot, because it's like, why doesn't Joe take a shot? I don't understand. He's up there with the fucking gun. I mean, it won't work, but at least try. It's not like it's Superman or something. So, and so his look of shock could be about that. Although he might not even know what the fuck is going on, because Joe, just, you know, he should have been the one to die in the first place. Still think he might.
If they do that, I think I'll end up hating it. I don't know if there's like any way they can like have this be satisfying to me.
So hopefully they can do this, because that would be like fucking the Flash like hiding under the fucking dumpster for me.
Well, I guess we will it'll be another one of those agree to disagree situations, because the dumpster was a Duek Machina thing which came out of nowhere and made no sense. They've had this device, they've used it before on the show, they used it in the same episode, which kind of grabs a hint, and they have a whole scene of HR talking about how he felt responsible, and he's also been a fucking useless fuck for almost the entire season. So this would be the one thing he does, like, oh, okay. Because I'm not really buying him being an inspiration of support for Tracy really making much of a difference. That's just ridiculous. So plus, I want to get rid of this character. So there's that. But we'll see. Then again, would it be funny if you end up really liking it and I end up hating it next week? I could see that happening just as easily. So
we've really gotten the best versions of HR the past couple weeks. I've actually grown to like the character.
I don't hate him. I just want something different. I want someone who just plays a bigger part in what goes on in that lab, because it feels like all they're doing is straining to make an excuse for him to be there. And I just don't feel he really adds anything beyond comic relief. And I'm like, I don't need that. That's just the way I feel about him. Mm-hmm. Every time I see Earth 2 Wells, I'm like, oh, I really like him. Is there any way we could get him back on the show regularly? You know, or just, can we all just move to Earth 2 already? Because they keep showing that train going by over and over, so that's really cool. I'm trying to figure out, are they using the same shot or is that a different shot? It seemed dumb to show the train going by every time they're on Earth 2. Anyway.
Can I go back to Captain Cold for just a second?
Absolutely.
And say how I think they gave him all the best lines for this episode this week. Not only does he say, he gives the meta commentary about the Flash's effect budgets.
Yes.
With the Jaws.
Oh yes! Okay. Oh,
because they figured out how to slip King Shark in there without using him too much, without costing too much money. But he also has the best line where he tells Cisco he'll put in a good word for his sister for him,
right?
Which I always thought was fantastic.
And a reminder of her, because now that her show got canceled, she can show up on the show again. So yay! So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well. It's on a show like this, it's not really a big surprise that he would get the best line. So who does get the good lines on the show? Cisco? Maybe? Not really? Sometimes. Speaking of Cisco, so how about stuff as far as like Cisco and Killer Frost? And where is this forest that they keep going to fight in? I know it's the same forest that they use in all the CW superhero shows.
Yes, yeah, we call that forest Gorilla City, Scott.
Okay, is that what it is? All right. But it just seemed, because he actually does call it a forest, so it's not like they're fighting in some park or something. There's a forest near Central City? I've never heard of it. I guess it could happen. You're more familiar with national parks. I guess that you could have a forest near a city somewhere. But then again, isn't there like a desert near Central City too, and a mountain range, and like every other, it's probably a polar ice cap near there too, I'm guessing.
Just about everything.
But anyway, but the Killer Frost stuff, I mean, Vicky, it was interesting that we got some interaction between her and Evil Barry, and some of those scenes were a little bit unexpected. I kind of wanted to hear what you thought about them.
Yeah, that scene with Caitlin and Evil Barry, I thought was really interesting, because, you know, it seemed like she was trying to reason with him.
So you're thinking maybe what happened last week might have had some lasting impact on her, humanizing her to whatever degree, to a certain degree or something.
Yeah, I think it might have, you know, kind of unknowingly for her. But then obviously it kind of didn't in the end, because she still is determined to fight Cisco for some reason, so.
Oh, and by the way, once again, running theme on TV shows this week. Villain having moments of humanity. Female villain having moments of humanity on show. We saw it with her. We see it on Arrow. And I'm sure. I guess we'll use Lillian. I guess it wouldn't be the one, and then still end up being bad. Yeah. So Lillian Luther does the same thing on that. Wow! Look at that. Look at all the links. They're so unoriginal. No, it's pretty funny. Dan, I know. I feel that since you got cut off due to Skype, whatever. I don't want to give you the shaft, so to speak, on any flash. Was there any? Unfortunate choice of words, perhaps, when I'm talking to you. Was there anything else that you wanted to, focus on, good or bad, with the episode? Because I just want to make sure you get your, I want to make sure you get your licks in here. God damn it!
No, for the most part, I thought it was a good episode and relatively well constructed. I actually like the stuff with HR this week, and while I don't think there's much they can do with the character in the future, I'd be okay if he hung around for a little bit while longer. I mean, unless they're going to have like an Earth 17 Tom Kavanaugh something.
Yes.
Maybe a speedster.
God.
Oh, no.
Well, he can be a good guy speedster.
That's true.
I don't, I thought it was, I thought it was solid. They did a good job.
Cool. Either of you guys got anything else before we move on?
Nope, I got nothing else.
I'll take that silence as a no, and I keep forgetting, never do that on a podcast. Bad form. All right, let's get to the scores then. Vicky, what would you give this week's episode of The Flash?
I will give it a 4.5.
Okay, you gave a super higher rating than The Flash, amazing. Kay's not here. Yeah, I'm used to saying Kate. Jason.
Easily gets a 5 for me because it brought a lot of the fun vibe back to the show that it's been lacking.
Easily a 5. Okay.
Easily.
Dan.
I'll give it a 4.5.
Okay. See, if I gave Supergirl a 4.5, I feel like I gotta get. I did like this one a bit better. I can't do 4.75, can I?
You can.
I can? Oh, yeah,
I don't think it deserves a 5, so I'm not going to argue with you.
Yeah, I want to give it a 5. I can't bring... You know what? Yeah, it's our fucking podcast. We can do whatever we want. Yeah, 4.75. I'm breaking the mold for me, personally, at least. I'm going to say 4.75 because it's not quite a 5, but it's better, but I liked it better than a 4.5. Okay. I don't even know if we're going to bother doing that whole average thing at the end of the season anyway. So. All right, so let's move on to the final show of the night, which would be Arrow. Oh, man, I wish Catwoman could be a character on the show. All right, so the latest episode of Arrow was titled Missing. So here's a bit of a recap here. It's happy times in Star City. The bad guy's under lock and key. Surprise birthday celebrations are the order of the evening. And even Ollie and Felicity are back on the slow track to being an item once again. Except it's mid-May, which is usually when the city needs saving, as they note in this very episode. And members of Team Arrow are disappearing right and left. Are the writers hitting the delete button? No, it's the villain Adrian Chase. Because, you never catch the main villain with 2 more episodes to go. Come on. So with the team down to the core 3, Ollie eventually insists on Lance and Thea holding up at a safe house, which turns out to be not so safe, especially with Earth 2's Black Siren in town. Oh, gotta love Thea trying to explain that whole deal to Quentin. As well as Felicity and John getting out of Dodge while he's dealing with Chase and trying to find Curtis, Renee, and the latest Canary, who never gets any screen time here. Man, wouldn't it have been nice if someone knew somebody who could just maybe hide them all on another Earth, or... Anyway. So, Ollie does find an ally. Malcolm Merlyn, fresh off his Legend stint. And eventually, Nyssa shows up to lend a sword, too. I say Malcolm is lending a hand, but he only has the one, so, And as we hurdle to the ending, Ollie refuses to let Chase go free, but then everyone gets snatched. And then when Ollie finds out his son William has been kidnapped, he then lets Chase go free after maiming most of the elite SCPD squad team that was guarding him. And where is all this headed? Why, to Leah and you, of course. Come on, that's where the Ivan Drago gets to torture Ollie, some more flashback is taking place. It all had to come together there, and that alone would be kind of cool, until we find out that Ollie needs to add one more to his team. And what could be better than the Flash recruiting Captain Cold? Green Arrow tabbing Slade Wilson for some help. Oh, yeah. Now, instead of trying to break this one up and down and all around, I just thought, especially it's just the three of us, let's just go round robin to, how we felt about the episode, things that we liked, didn't like, whatever, and you guys can just make it a more general conversation here. So, Dan, I know you just recently caught up on Arrow because you'd missed a few in a row. Going into this one, what'd you think of this episode and what struck you good, bad, or in the middle?
I don't have very much to complain about the last four episodes at all. I mean, there's a few things that that weren't as good as the other things, but I thought they were really executing the story well, and I like what they're doing with Prometheus. I suppose I could see why maybe somebody would think like would get tired of him like always being like 50 steps ahead of everybody else, but it didn't really that kind of thing didn't really bother me at all. I just kind of I enjoyed the ride that they were putting me through, and I wasn't expecting the ending that we saw this week, which was pretty awesome.
That ending alone, that might be one of my favorite Arrow endings I've seen.
Yeah, it's just just a lot of cool stuff. Malcolm, cool stuff.
I like that kind of the way we were talking about how Captain. You can see how the way Captain Cold was. That his time with the Legends kind of impacted him. I kind of like to believe that Malcolm's also been kind of changed a bit by his dealings with his Legion of Doom stuff and what ended up happening to him there. Because he seems more reasonable, and especially the way he speaks directly to Ollie in this episode, than I think he ever has before, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, he definitely seems to be a changed man.
I think I liked him more than normal. I mean, I always like him. Because he's just, he plays it up. He's a little, again, a bit on the campy side, whatever. But he's very much the voice of reason, which is really weird because he hasn't come up with the most reasonable things in the past. But
I suppose maybe he just doesn't feel like he's much of a villain anymore since after they remade reality, he just had like the lamest like version of reality ever. So yeah, maybe not a villain.
That's right. It's like, really? That's all you want to change out? You got your hand back? That's it. I just love the idea that Ollie is recruiting this team. And the funny thing is, if you look at if you look at it being Malcolm, and I apologize if I mispronounced her name yet again, because I have a penchant for mispronouncing names on the podcast. I said Nisa, it's Nisa, right? That's how you pronounce it, right?
Yeah,
it's not Nisa. I would say having a team of Malcolm, Merle, Nisa, and now Slade freaking Wilson, that to me is better than any other Team Arrow I've seen on this show. I was like, oh, give me that show. we can get rid of Mad Dog and Mr. Terrific. I want to see these characters week after week. I know that can't happen, but I like to imagine what happens. Vicky, what was your take on this one?
Yeah, no, I really liked a lot of it. Too. I knew that Slade was gonna be back, but I had no clue about Malcolm or Nissa. So those were really good surprises for me. And like you were saying earlier, just kind of the level of honesty that Malcolm was with Oliver was just different, and I think it was pretty fantastic. They're kind of not bickering, but just that discussion that they had by the car wreck was really good.
One of the things I really liked about the scenes with Malcolm, and especially the scenes between him and Ollie having conversations like that, I've liked the show this season. I think it's definitely an improvement over the last two seasons. My issue with the show at times, and I don't want to make this because I'm a writer. It has nothing to do with that. But the writing does tend to be very, very, very redundant on the show, where they will repeat the same lines over and over in the same episode, and it's like, yeah, we got the point. You don't need to keep saying it over and over. It really annoys me because it's really badly done when they do that. And plus, a lot of the interaction with certain characters tend to feel like, oh, we've gone through this before. I've seen this conversation between John and Ollie 1,000 times before, or Ollie and Felicity 1,000 times before. The stuff with Malcolm felt fresher to me. Even if he might have been saying some stuff that Ollie has heard before, but it was said with a different voice, you know, both literally and figuratively, and from a different perspective. And so it just added a spark, much like Cat Grant and Supergirl, to those scenes and to the episode that I think the show sometimes doesn't have. So that's one of the things I really liked about the episode. I cringed when they had Malcolm Merlyn saying the line about 50 steps ahead. And I was like, oh, so are we going back to beating that nail into the ground over and over? Because you could have a freaking drinking game for this season. How many times they've made a comment about Adrian Chase being whatever number of steps ahead. Yeah, you say it once or twice. You don't say it 15 or 20 times in the season. It's ridiculous. But other than that, I really, really love those scenes. I love the antagonism between him and when Nisa shows up. I thought that was like spot on.
Oh, yeah.
And she still calls him, and she still calls Ollie husband.
Yeah. but I think what was pretty funny was, you know, how Malcolm was saying, oh, during that undertaking, we thought you had all these tech skills. Nope, it was all Felicity.
That was pretty funny. I forgot all about that. By the way, did anyone think that when Ollie quickly like takes down Curtis, they were actually making a joke about the fact that Curtis gets beaten up all the time on the show? or maybe I'm reading too much into that one. I probably am.
Possibly. But there's one thing. You probably guys didn't know this, but like when they're, you know, asking Felicity where she got the cake, she was saying, you know, Lord Mesa Bakery, he's like a artist that has done some like fan art of the Arrow and stuff. So I thought that was a nice little Easter egg.
I was painfully aware of it because I'm, how do I put this? I am not a fan of the Lord Mesa artwork. Because the whole making characters look like they're all children, I personally find creepy. But everyone else seems to enjoy them, so I just kind of keep my mouth shut. It to me, what are those toys that everyone's really into? They're not really toys.
The Funko Pop things.
Funko Pop things. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't care for those either. But I feel like the Lord Mesa stuff is kind of like the art equivalent of like the Funko toy. And again, I know most people are into it, so I don't. You know, that's why I usually don't say anything about it. But when I saw that on the cake, I was like, "Oh, really?" And then she said that, like, "Oh, all right." But I know a lot of people thought, like you were excited about that. I was just like, "I hate the Lord Mesa stuff." That's why I said that. Send your anger letters to me.
I agree with. I'll fall on the sword with you too, Scott. I think that stuff's kind of lame, kind of creepy. I mean, you know. But of course, I didn't go to Penn State, so what the fuck do I know?
Oh, it's the wrong podcasting network, dude. Anyway, awesome. Okay, let me think now. I got Penn State in my head, kind of threw me there. So what else did we have in this episode? I have to make fun of it just because, and it's not the Arrow, it's not Arrow, it's a TV thing. It's from the movies and now it's a TV thing. So every single police station or whatever in the country must be equipped with this super duper high tech plexiglass jail cell thing, which, you know, it all goes back to, you know, like Silence of the Lambs, but, you know, 25 years ago. But I was saying, really? They have this one special thing there for the, It felt like such a dopey cliche to me. It kind of bugged me for some reason. I know it's just because I've seen it so many times on so many TV shows now, and I would like someone in law enforcement to actually say, "Hey, do any of you actually have a cell like that?" I mean, I'm here in New York City.
Yeah.
You know, we don't. So it seems a little ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I'm with you a little bit on that one.
I mean, again, it didn't take anything away. I just went, so you're making him. I get you're trying to make me believe he's like he's the next Hannibal Lecter, you know? He's not. But
wasn't that an Argus
like Cell?
I don't think he was being held at Argus, though.
I know. I thought there was some line about that in one of the episodes. I'm not sure.
For some reason, I thought it was Argus, but I mean, I don't know.
Well, who's being detained?
Adrian Chase in this specific episode, because he was arrested and taken in by the authorities, and then he was going to be taken to. Where was he going to be taken to specifically?
Idaho.
So basically, he was what they call, he was in holding, and they're going to be transferred to a prison until his trial. Much like they do in New York, you're in holding, you're in detention, and then you eventually get shipped off to Rikers, where you have to spend time at Rikers until your trial comes up, which is what they were doing with him. It doesn't make sense that he would be at. Argus would say, okay, we're just going to keep you just for a little, just for like a day or two, and then you can go hang out in some prison in Idaho. That doesn't work for me because that makes no sense. It's either one or the other. So I'm not saying you guys might be 100% right, and I just didn't hear it, but except I watched this like at 3 a.m. But it doesn't make sense because I don't. Also, those weren't Argus agents that were protecting him. They all, I recall them having like Star City logos and letters on them. So I don't know. I'm gonna say it wasn't until proven otherwise. But I tend to be wrong with details like this, so you know, you guys can write. Anyway, still stupid. I still hated it. We were just in Argus, and they kept all those really worst criminals down there, and they weren't using glass cells for them. Just saying. Anyway, anything else that was really feels like there's other stuff in this episode. I just don't know. We had the flashback, of course, so which was kind of neat because he had a flashback that incorporated elements from all the other flashbacks. So that was kind of a new thing for them, and we got lots of Dolph Lundgren looking really strange in the flashback as well. So that was kind of fun too. Did you guys like the flashback?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, hell yeah.
Was that the first time since season one that his original mentor shows up?
Yeah.
Because he died in season one, right?
And maybe, yeah.
I don't know if he ever appeared ever again.
It's been a long time,
You know what? He might have shown up in some form in season two also, because Shadow was his daughter. So there could have been some sort of memory thing with him. I don't remember, though. It's been so many years now, it seems. But anyway, I loved him showing up in the cell, but trying to convince him to kill himself, which was pretty fucked up. But even his wig didn't look as bad as normal in this episode. It still didn't look good. But I loved the conceit of a drug that makes so whenever he touched any of his old wounds, he would immediately feel the original pain of receiving them.
That was fantastic.
So I'll give the writers credit one more time. Like, okay, that's a nice little idea you came up with then, because I've never heard of that before. So that was a really great little idea they came up with. So I guess in the finale we still have to have a big flashback finale too, because he eventually has to. I guess he has to eventually kill Drago before is it. Is he going to set the fire so that someone sees him on the island? Is that what he was setting up to do in that?
Yes.
Yep.
So he couldn't have lit a fire on the island at any... Okay. So.
No, because remember, what was it? Anatoly was going to, like, find the ship or whatever and kind of send them in that direction. And Oliver was going to have the signal fire.
Ah, thank you. See... So this is a warning for people. Watch shows like this not at 3 or 3:30 in the morning. You tend to miss details. anything else? Oh, gosh. How do we not talk about Black Siren? How do we not talk about Quentin being told about Thea trying to sort of explain multiple Earths and stuff to Quentin? That was one of my favorite things in the episode.
Oh, gosh, that was a head trip.
That, and the fact that Black Siren, because it looked like she might have had just a little bit of humanity there, because I think she, doesn't she say that he had to agree that they wouldn't kill him? Doesn't she make a point of saying that?
Or am I... I think that was part of her deal with Chase.
Is Quentin dead in Earth 2 then? Is that they established that before? Because I definitely got that impression this week that, like, you know, she's like, you know, her looking at him is like him looking at her.
I don't know if they established it, but I suspect that is what it could be. That would make more sense why she wouldn't want him to be killed, perhaps. I love that. I would like to get to find out more about her character. I'm hoping that we get her more next season, and maybe we get some Earth 2 backstory on her. I would be genuinely more interested in that than a lot of other things that we spend an inordinate amount of time on the show. I would love to find out more about her character, and the whole thing. Like, I'm not sure. Is it her actual power? I don't know if they said it. Is that her actual power? Is she using a device? I'm not really clear on that. Really, is she a meta or not?
How did she
get the abilities on Earth 2? Was it also the particle thing that happened there as well? Was it something else?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure that's how she got hers.
I think they talked about it on Flash, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Right, it's dropped in a line. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see what she was before that.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, definitely.
Because was she a bad seed before that happened, or is it going to be like a Killer Frost situation where she turned bad, which kind of ridiculous. I want that more than, you know, a lot of the crap we tend to waste time with on the show. Do that and bring back Ragman, and then the show is aces with me again.
And give us more Dinah. Oh,
Ragman. Yeah, I like her.
Or spin them off into a new version of Birds of Prey, like we were joking about last week, or Gotham City Sirens, or whatever. You know, put this Black Canary on that show. Give me Killer Frost and
Golden Glider.
Oh, Golden Glider. Vicky's like, oh my god, four women on one show. That's not possible.
Yeah, seriously.
That would have to be like 40 guys to make that work. Anyway.
Well, yeah, because each one will have to date 10 per season to, like, satisfy the CW relationship quotient.
Exactly.
Yep.
I might have missed it, but did you guys talk about, like, where Mad Dog and Dinah are, like, in this endgame situation? Like, why they're not there in the end?
Mad Dog?
I suppose, yeah. Did I say Mad Dog?
Yeah, you said Mad Dog.
I didn't know what you said.
Back to the Future 3. But yeah, you guys have any idea like why they're not there? Maybe just like they're not important enough to like be like stuck with Oliver and like, you know, Leanne Yu, and it's like not part of Chase's game, and they're just locked in a bunker somewhere, or do you think there might be more to it?
That's what I was a little confused about, because, you know, it was basically stated, you know, that Nyssa and Black Siren and all of them took like Renee and Dinah, but they're not on the island there with the other team, so where are they?
I think we'll see them in the next episode. I think it was just some lame way around budgets and not paying them to be
contracting.
And, you know, there's like, oh wait, how many more actors, you know, named people are going to be in this episode that we got to pay? Oh, we got to bring Malcolm in, Barry McNeeson. Oh shit, Slade Wilson, we got to pay. He's just in it for a second, but we got to pay him a full check now. So they're like, all right, let who are the two characters we either spend no time with or no one really likes? Oh, those are those two. Okay. They won't be in this episode. We got more Evelyn than we got Renee or Dinah.
That's seriously my answer for every time someone asks, hey, where's the certain character? It's a budget.
Yeah.
It really is. I saw a Quora question earlier today comparing and talking about like the Marvel TV shows and the DC TV shows. And they had a break, and they attribute a lot of the issues with the relative show's budgets. And if you were to go and take a look and see what the budgets are for your average episode of, like, say, The Flash or Arrow, or even, you know, to a slightly higher extent, Supergirl and Legends, but not as much higher as you'd think, and then compare it to all the Marvel shows, whether it be the Netflix ones or even Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for that matter, all those shows have budgets that are well over double or even triple the budgets of the DCCW shows. So that's what you're working with. So that applies to effects, but it applies probably also to paying the on-screen talent. Again, that's no excuse for Legends hiring the crappiest Canadian extras for all the historical parts on that show. But I do think that does become an issue with, you know, getting some name people or decent actors on some of these shows, or packing the cast too big. I mean, that's just, I mean, I'm supposing that. I don't know that for a fact. Okay. So yeah, we didn't really talk about this, but I'm glad you brought that up, because that was something that should at least be mocked, if not mentioned. So there you go. Is there anything else, or can we move on to the scores? I know I'm not supposed to ask if there's anything else.
I will say that I really enjoyed that, you know, the fight sequence with Malcolm and Oliver when they were going after Chase. I thought that was
I thought they did it. Again, a lot of that was with arrows.
I was going to say, we got a lot of arrow action.
Because I was going to get really pissed off, like, you got not one, but two different archers. They better be archering. I know it's not a word. Okay. Because that's going to really piss me off. Just because I know Malcolm's from the League of Assassins, but I still don't. And I know he's supposed to be this amazing fighter, but every time I look at, you know, John Brown, I'm like, yeah, you're just the bow and arrow guy. Don't fight. It's silly when you fight. That's my opinion. Okay, so let's get to the scores then. Mickey, what would you give this week's episode of Arrow?
I will give it a 5.
Don't out the flies again. Daniel?
I'm even though I'm a big fan of Arrow this season, I'm a little bit stingier with my 5s than average. So I was already planning on doing this before Scott did his flash maneuver, but I'm going to give it a 4.75.
Excellent. I'm going to give it a 4.5. I felt I liked it. With the slave thing. God damn it. You know what? I can't believe I'm going to do this twice in one podcast. I'm joining Dan on this one. It's still not quite a 5 for me, but I'll give it the 4.75. Oh, I just ripped open my finger. Holy shit. I'm scratching my finger, and it looks like a big jet of blood just poured out of my hand. Well, it's all over my keyboard. Anyway, okay.
Yeah.
What? Oh, no. I will point out, this is the first time I've given Arrow a 5 this season.
Really?
Yeah.
You gave Arrow a 5 in week 8, in week 11, in week 17, in week 18.
I did not.
You did.
He's got it all written down.
I do.
He's like the fat check Politico of this podcast. I stopped keeping track in December. I just came up. Like, what am I doing? He's doing it. Okay, so. Where are we? Oh, Dan. Oh, wait. He just finished. Okay, stop talking about Arrow. Let's get on to the next thing, which, of course, is
the Speed Weed Hands Off Moment of the Week.
So, Vicky, what would your Speed Weed moment be this week?
Okay. I know I gave Supergirl a 5 for this week, but Mon-El having Supergirl go back to try and talk to his mom was stupid.
It made no sense. I was like, what? No. I like that you took a rather major thing about the episode, because I was like, Jason, I'm curious if it'll bleed into mine. It's okay if it does. I can come up with an alternative if I have.
All right, mine is, during the big confrontation between Savitar and Flash, why does Iris just lay down on the ground and not attempt to get away?
Gosh, she's a job.
I was just sitting there. I was watching that whole sequence. I was like, you could avoid this. You could just, you know, they're fast. They can catch you, but you're making no attempt at all. I just thought that was dumb.
Yeah, it was.
Harry's looking really fucking good right now. Dan, you're usually good for this.
Okay, in The Flash, when Barry is going to recruit Captain Cold for his heist mission. But, like, and of course he does it by, like, you know, going back in time and doing some shenanigans again, even though if he has a plan to, like, bring him back, But, like, did he really have to go all the way back to, like, 1891 to, like, get him? Couldn't he just, like, got him somewhere else where, like, he wasn't quite, like, a badass bad guy? But, like, I don't know. Maybe this fits into, like, Legends, which I bailed on in Season 1 somewhat, and it kind of fits in with that, which I got the impression that it did. But it just kind of seemed like, you know, Barry's plan to run, to go back to 1891 was a little overkill.
I think the bigger question there is, how does Barry know where Captain Cold is?
Exactly.
Time? That's the question. It's not either be 1891, you know, time of the pyramids or last week. I was like, how does Barry know where Captain Cold is? I don't understand that. They never explained that to me. So, and I don't remember if there was a specific episode that might have. I can't remember. The Jonah Hex one took place earlier than 1891, I believe. But not much earlier. I don't even know if they had an episode that took place in that one. Unless it was that one. I don't know. Can't be sure.
I got the impression that they're trying to, like, show that this is, like, some point that, like, something happened in Legends. Like, when, I don't know what he was talking about, like, you know, not having strings attached or something. If, like, somehow that's something that he says in some episode towards the end of Season 1 of Legends. With, like, you know, so, like, this little mission with Barry is, like, somehow, like, a part of him becoming, like, more heroic.
Right.
And, like, you know, we just didn't know it until now.
Not sure.
The no strings on me thing was what he said when he was... In the, like, finale of Season 1, like, before he died.
Okay.
Saying, like, you can't control me or something.
So this must have been, like, what led to that, and then this paid off that. So that's cool. And it's still better than that shitty Avengers movie.
There you go. Okay, let me quickly get to my... I just realized I'm trying to stick to a certain time here. And I will freely say that I was inspired by someone on another Facebook page. And because I've been thinking about it in a different scheme. Okay, so The Flash. This whole thing has been about trying to figure out a way to protect Iris, save Iris, keep Iris from Savitar. And the idea of this episode was, okay, don't tell Barry, but we're going to go hide our way on Earth too. And you all should be safe there. Putting aside that if you're going to switch, put it on another Earth, why not put it on the Earth with Supergirl, which would really be... I understand why you don't do that, because, you know, it's Supergirl powered, blah, 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 especially with that budget. But they also established in this episode that Argus, especially that part of Argus, has this whole meta-dampening thing. So that's why Barry can't use his powers there. Hey, you know what that sounds like to me? That sounds like a place you could have hit Iris. Because that means neither Savitar or Killer Frost could use their abilities, because they're both at meta abilities. Why wouldn't you just... Lila wants to save Iris. You know what? Why don't you just keep her down here for a couple days while you go deal with him? I don't know why no one thinks of that, because so much of their plan to break in is because he doesn't have any powers. It's like, hey, no, why not do that? Then it doesn't matter if Savitar... you know, knows or doesn't that she's there, because there's nothing he can do about it unless he finds someone he can recruit to break in. Which, you know, maybe then you have a different story, but I don't care. It's no one thinks of it in the moment, and you make a point of saying this is a place where people with meta powers, they don't work. It's kind of a loophole in the script that I went, oh, that's kind of dumb. And someone mentioned that on Facebook, and I was like, oh, I got to talk about that on the podcast, because that's... I was thinking about something like that. So, there you go. That's my moment. Okay, I guess it's time to wrap things up. So, if you enjoyed this podcast, you'll undoubtedly enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. You can find us on Facebook, we're the Series TV Drama Podcast. Like the page and join the conversation about shows like The Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, and so many others that we talk about on podcasts, and a lot of shows that we don't talk about at all. You can also track us down on iTunes. Type in the Series TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. And finally, you can also follow us on the Twitter. Our handle is at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Series TV Drama Podcast. And oh yes, there is one more place you can find us. Our intrepid Vicky is a reporter in disguise on the website that's known as...
PopCultHQ.com.
You can find our podcast there, as well as any number of articles dealing with TV, film, maybe even the occasional cosplaying, I'm sure. Right, Vicky?
Yeah, I'm actually going to be covering a convention this coming weekend.
Awesome. I expect to see lots of pictures that are all inappropriate. No, I'm just kidding. All right. I know that was a bit of a rocky podcast for a number of reasons, but I think it kind of, I still felt it kind of worked out pretty well. I'm glad you guys were able to make it. Any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
Hey, this was 183.
I was wondering. I kept thinking, Jason hasn't said it yet. 183.
I like to keep you guessing as to when it's coming.
Oh, I know. It's like the Easter egg no one cares about. No, I'm kidding. It's a rotten egg in every episode. No, I'm kidding. No, I enjoy it. I don't know why I don't incorporate that into our images for the podcast, but I don't care. If and when we hit number 200, that'll be a big thing. But it probably won't be with you guys, so tough shit. Just kidding. All right. Well, with that weird note said, I will start the round of goodbyes by thanking you guys and saying goodnight to everybody out there.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Seattle. We love you.
Motion, the sultan of speed, the wizard of whizzle, yes indeed. Go from here to China in a no time flat. Beat the speed of light and you can't beat that. The
Flash, the Flash,
meet the mighty Flash.
The Flash, the Flash,
in a fight he'll smash and crash. Smash a whole gang of crooks or schnooks. Hey, he'll just clobber any kind of bad guy. Thief or robber, the world's fastest human. Yeah, man, the Flash.
The unbeatable Flash. The unbeatable Flash.
Is his real name, works with the police, justice is his aim, wears a ring with the Flash's uniform in it when danger.